I feel my time is nearing meeting Creator and reuniting with my mother. I want my story to be told because Black life matters. Others may judge devotion to servitude as a desire to put the past to bed. They are mistaken. I view the year of my birth as auspicious, for I was born in the year of the Great Conspiracy in 1770. Then, the wicked 1772 hurricane sealed my fate, causing Massa George up and leave for good as Pasteur destroyed bad. St. Kitts is an ocean away. I left her when I was approaching 14 years. I was sent for by Master Taylor, leaving the only people and island I loved and knew. I had no say. Although, I cannot tell an untruth, I was overjoyed at the prospect. England, the country that the English people spoke of with great reverence and with an air of superiority, whilst forever complaining about our supposed malingering and surliness. They cursed the intolerable, unrelenting fire of the sun, which they concluded conspired to be the ruination of them. I have been resident here for most of my long 71 years. I am too old now to return. What would life have been like if I had decided to go back after the windfall, you ask? What to say? Master George left a sum of £50 for me in his will, and my freedom if I returned to the land of my birth. This continues to astound me and remains a puzzle. Did he think I would not survive without him? That I would not fit into English society? For I have not been paid a penny piece since sojourning here. No hint of such a discussion has passed between our lips. I am no longer subject to slavery like my fellow countrymen, but I am not quite a free man. I have to ponder why he did this. Did the Almighty visit him upon his deathbed? Or was I the son he did not claim, as is often the case? The Taylors seemed to own everything. The cane fields, the water mills, the boiling houses and copper kettles, the moon, the stars, sea and sky. I can still see in my mind's eye these same stone mills, as hot as burning coals to the touch, the shades of azure that coloured the horizon, and smell the sweet, sickly smell of cane juice and molasses as they crystallised into sugar. Sugar not meant for our palates, even though we were the producers. They owned us Africans. Body and soul. Whites were parliament and court, judge and jury, cup and saucer. I do not know how or why such a situation came about, but I can conclude that it cannot be by sheer intelligence alone. Witness my dear mother. She taught my brother and I to read and write come twilight. I do not doubt this act helps damp my destiny also. A life overseas in England, a world away as stark from that of my people as day is from night. Mother worked as a housekeeper in the grand house, having particular responsibility for curtains, cushions, rugs and bed linen, all under the red eye of Yellow Maddie. Father was less fortunate, working outside, but not in the fields. Thank you, God. He was a patroller, witnessing the activities of those entering and leaving plantation boundaries. He remembers the failed conspiracy well. Our field brethren were treated like dogs, scorned and beaten to subdue and cure any rebelliousness. Whites mistake subservience and love of duty for meekness, but the threat of violence hovered in the air and seeped into our pores. The violence they created covered everything like a fine dust, permeating the very air we breathed. This is what made slavery endure. Judith and I married in secret. The master was still a single gentleman himself, and I did not wish to cause him any embarrassment that could affect my position. This same year that I witnessed the master shaking his head at the passing of the law banning us from being traded, threatening the family coffers, I daren't think what spite my people suffered back in St. Kitts because of this monumental development. The double bent black backs of our men and women, slick with sweat and red wheels that came from a vigorous and prolonged whipping, are forever imprinted. They even punished us children by withholding food, putting us to work wearing slave collars and tending fires out in the fields. A most dangerous task for young minds and bodies. How barbaric! I would have remained in bondage if I had not been summoned to Carl Shalton in 1785, working in the kitchen whilst running errands for the blacksmith, keeping the horses, stables and saddlery tidy with nil rumination, appreciation or regard. How humiliating such an existence is to the human soul. Master George trained me to be his butler, which was not beyond my talents. I am not a dullard, nor ignorant. I thus became a servant who was useful in that I could read and write better than most of the white working people I encountered, a skill which was valued by the master. Consequently, I gave him no cause to raise his voice or fist to me, and was well rewarded. I did not labour in the kitchen, garden, or in the grounds, like Betty, Lewis, Kane, Naylor, and Cordelia. I worked directly with the master, and solely in the house, unless given express permission to venture further afield, such as to the old rectory where Miss Estridge, his sister, to collect bales of silk and calico. My designated tasks were to ferry his instructions, make sure that his mail was posted, that his wardrobe and washroom was always in order. I wore a smart uniform made of indigo and cotton, was responsible for mixing his stuff, and to be in attendance every lunch and dinner whilst he was at home. I wore leather shoes, white gloves, had a ticking gold pocket watch, and my own room in which to lay down. I guarded my elevated status. I ate with both knife and fork, silver, not tin, 3 times a day. I had the trust of the master to leave the household to personally deliver post, collect deliveries of cotton shirts or flasks of golden Caribbean rum. I was the first to greet visitors who stepped over the threshold. Very important, significant people in the area and in the same line of industry. Thomas Scorwin and Admiral Leake come to mind. I'm indebted to you discreetly bringing me news from London, such as the Sparfield riots. Did I tell you I came upon a Quaker once when going on an errand to Mill Lane Mill? I recognised him by his dress and courteous manner when passing. How I loved the walk across the park with its lanes, the glass-like honeywood pond, whilst all the time being guided by the rhythmic switch of the water wheel as it churns the wandle. I have been fortunate. Master George's gift enables us to rent this small holding, and Judith has an income doing laundry from here. I am not one of the black poor who has to steal, beg, prostitute, or sweep the streets for a living. I have never had to resort to the Committee for Relief. I have lived long enough to know the horror of slavery that Robbie Wedderburn railed against has come to an end, legally at any point. But what does it all mean? Will my brothers and sisters have free passage to England, should they desire? How will they be treated upon arrival? How will they be able to make a fair living and live where they are wont? Will we ever be compensated for the centuries of free labour and accompanying degradation suffered, like our masters are? I glimpsed mention of this compensation in the Times, the newspaper of choice for the family. I glimpsed it in the Times some years past, as it lay waiting for me to serve during luncheon. Perhaps being able to read and write is the greatest act of freedom after all.